You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator, and it's also your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host, and with me today is Eva Aldrich, who is the CEO of CFRE. Now, you'll probably be wondering, what is CFRE? We're going to get into that. But if you listen to a podcast a couple of weeks ago, we had a fundraising professional on who carried the designation CFRE. And what it stands for is Certified Fundraising Executive. And in my opinion, it's a designation that points out the importance of being a professional in the fundraising field. We have lots of people that do fundraising, lots of amateurs, lots of people who just decide for whatever reason they want to support an organization and they gather people together to support that particular charity. But in the world of organized philanthropy, it is really valuable to know what you're doing and to not only do it well, but do it fairly and to respect the interests and desires of donors. And professional fundraisers know how to do that because they were trained to do it. And many of them are now certified to do it through CFRE. So we're going to get into CFRE and also the life and background of the woman, Eva Aldrich, who heads that organization and find out what she thinks about it and how she even got to that role. So Eva, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Thank you, Art. I'm delighted to be here.
So let's talk about CFRE. Where did it come from? Where did the designation come from? For a long time, I think probably up until the 60s, most people didn't even consider fundraising a profession. And then suddenly people band together and made it a profession, and CFRE is now part of that.
Yeah, actually, fundraising as a profession, in my opinion, started around the time of World War I. There were fundraisers before that, major fundraising efforts, including to establish Harvard University, that happened, you know, at the beginning or even before the beginning of the United States. But it was really with the need to raise massive funds for the war effort. For instance, through the Red Cross's massive campaign of around that World War I era, that it was necessary to really grow a group of individuals who were knowledgeable about how to conduct fundraising campaigns. Now, what needed to happen in order to make, you know, huge goals of multi-millions worth of dollars happen. And so really that is the beginning of fundraising as a profession in the United States, I would say. One of the first times when I think that professional consciousness, you know, really came together was with the establishment of the American Association of Fundraising Council in the 1930s. That group really was where, you know, some of the big name firms came together in order to learn more about this growing profession and to start to set standards for the profession, including talking about what is the distinction between who is a fundraising professional and who is, you know, a valuable volunteer, but not necessarily that person who is there full time to lead fundraising efforts. It was around that time and with that group, the discussions such as establishing a code of ethics for the profession, standards for the profession, and really thinking about what does it mean to be a fundraising professional as opposed to someone who raises funds for charity. In the 1960s is when the National Society for Fundraising Executives was formed. And that organization, which is the precursor of AFP Global, was really where it started focusing more on individuals as professionals as opposed to fundraising firms as being the key entity. And from that work with AFP, gradually it was, as the profession grew, there was a movement inside that said, we need to have a way to really encourage individual fundraising professionals to grow in their profession, to learn, to achieve, and also so that we can have, a symbol to the world that fundraising is a profession and these individuals have fulfilled the requirements to be considered fundraising professionals. After the certification was begun by AFP, it was then adopted by the Association of Healthcare Philanthropy as well. So there was one consolidated certification for fundraising professionals. And that certification continued to thrive. And eventually in 2001 was actually spun off as its own organization, which became CFRE International. And the reason for that was because it was necessary to be able to become an accredited certification. And that is a very much a distinguishing feature of CFRE. We are the only internationally available accredited certification for fundraising professionals, and we're accredited to international standards through the American National Standards Institute for Standards for Certification of Personnel. We're very proud of that, and it's just one more reason that people who hold the CFRE can be sure that they have a high-quality credential that is recognized worldwide.
Fantastic. And you've continued ever since. How many people get certified every year now?
Every year we have nearly 1,100 people who become certified. And we also have a large cadre of individuals who recertify because that is a requirement every 3 years. So we recently looked at our numbers and we have over 7,600 CFREs worldwide.
Wow, that's a good number, but you would think that in this need that organizations have for fundraising, that there'd be a lot more. And is that mainly because, it takes a lot to pass the certification, or is it maybe somewhat of a lack of awareness? What is your thought about that?
I think it's probably a combination. Really, when it comes to the numbers of CFREs, we do have requirements to be a CFRE. In order to earn the designation, you have to have a minimum of 3 years of paid full-time employment in the fundraising profession, and probably 5 to 6 years, given the level of the exam, would be ideal. You also have to be able to show that you have education as a fundraiser, a minimum of 80 hours earned within the last 5 years, and performance as a fundraiser, which means you need to have demonstrated actual funds raised and or communications and management projects that directly support fundraising. So as you know, there's a lot of turnover in the profession. People often stay in jobs only a year and a half, 2 years. Also, I think when people are first trying out different careers, some may come into fundraising and go out. There are also natural exits because of people who have decided to go another pathway or who are entering the profession later in, as a career. So there are a number of reasons why I think that there are only 7,600 CFREs at this point. On the other hand, it's a good percentage of the number of fundraising professionals who actively belong to fundraising membership organizations. If you compare our number to the number of individuals with who are members of AFP, the Association of Healthcare Philanthropy, other similar organizations, you'll find that probably overall CFREs constitute, I would say, in the range of, in the ballpark range, about 15% of that membership. Again, when you consider the in and out that goes on with the profession, the requirements that are or necessary to earn a CFRE, I think that explains quite a bit.
Now, I would suspect, too, that some people who have become certified don't get recertified. So if you look at who's actually taken the exam and potentially passed it at some point, I would imagine that number is much higher than 7,500.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the 7,600 is only currently certified CFREs.
Yeah.
So yes, over time, I would have to take a look at those figures, but we have had more of those certify. I would say, though, that once people become a CFRE, according to our numbers, they tend to stay a CFRE unless one of two things happen. Either they retire or they leave the profession. So when people are committed, I think, to showing their professionalism through earning a CFRE, they tend to keep it up. And I think that's because in addition to it being a signal to the public and their peers that, you know, they are serious about the fundraising profession and the work they do, it is also, you know, in our surveys we've done of our certificates, it's really for them a very great personal achievement and a source of pride.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too, whether the certification, in addition to giving people the information and education that they need, or proving that they have that information and education, is that the single impetus, or are there other reasons, for instance, that someone might say, I really benefit from having this? So, for instance, do you notice an increase in salary among CFREs? Is it easier for them to find employment? Do donors tend to appreciate interacting with them more than anyone else? It'd probably be hard to prove those things, but I would imagine, I mean, if I was looking to hire a fundraising person and one had a CFRE designation and the other one didn't, all things equal, I'd probably take the one with the CFRE. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Art. And a lot of employers do absolutely support that. If you take a look at job listings for fundraisers, you'll note a number of them say CFRE preferred, that they are looking for individuals who have that commitment to the profession. They, and also a piece of hard data we do have is from the Association of Fundraising Professionals annual compensation and benefits survey. And in the 1921 survey, it showed that individuals with CFREs tended to earn up to 15% more than their non-certified counterparts at the same level of experience.
Well, there you go. There's an impetus right there. That's going to more... No, that more than pays for the certification.
Well, you know, I would love to be able to say there's a direct causation, that you get your CFRE and automatically, you know, you see that extra money on your check. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. But I do think that given what CFRE requires in terms of, you know, a commitment to your continuing education as a professional, a commitment to achieving results in fundraising, and a commitment to practicing as a professional fundraiser, that those things are the things that I would say most successful professionals do. And so that CFRE, it's more than just a sign you've passed an exam.
Yeah.
It shows that you're really committed to your continued growth as a fundraiser and by extension, the success of your organization.
Yeah. Well, Eva, I want to talk about some of the criteria that are involved in passing the exam. But before we do that, I'd like to just find out a little bit more about you. Now, are you a former fundraiser, recovering fundraiser yourself, and having taken on this job? You mentioned that you went out and did a dissertation on a fundraising theme. Is it your educational background? How did you get to this role?
You know, I like many fundraisers, I did not start out to be one, but I over time I collected a myriad of experiences that came together to really put me in a position to get this job, which I love and believe in dearly. My path is basically that I started out as an academic. After a few years of teaching freshman composition at 8 a.m., I realized that maybe that wasn't the path for me for the next 40 years. But I was fortunate in that the vice president for advancement at the institution where I worked had recently left to start his fundraising consulting firm. And he needed someone who was good at the sort of things that English majors are good at, with writing, with verbal communication, with analysis of texts, all of those sorts of things. So I went to work with Johnson Grossnickel and Associates in Indiana, and I was there for 11 years, and that's where I learned fundraising and also worked with dozens of clients over time, seeing not only, and working with, fundraising and philanthropy, but also getting an understanding of the challenges that nonprofit organizations face. After I'd been at Johnson Grossnickel for a while, the love of teaching had never quite left, even though maybe 8 a.m. was not the ideal time, as I mentioned, for me. And so I went to the fundraising school at the Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University, which is now the Lilly Family School of Philanthropy. And I was the associate director of the fundraising school and public service for 5 years. And during that time, I worked with, various aspects of, fundraising in terms of grants for the fundraising school, but also developed curriculum and taught curriculum for the fundraising school. And it was a very rewarding experience, and also the reason why I decided I need to, go the next step, go beyond the master's I had earned a while back, and enter the PhD program there in philanthropic studies, which I graduated from just a while back. Again, it was a wonderful experience, but I joined the board of CFRE International. First I'd been a volunteer with committees, including chairing the exam committee, because I had earned my own CFRE about 5 years into my time at Johnson Grossnickel. So I wanted to give back to the organization because getting my CFRE meant a lot to me. It was really a sign that I had gone from being a newbie in the profession, to being someone who knew the basics. Now, I had the same credential as the president of the firm, and that meant a lot to me. It was the personal satisfaction I talked about earlier, but also the recognition from peers, and that meant a lot in my career. So I got involved with CFRE as a volunteer, even became a board member, but then it was time to find a new CEO for CFRE, and I decided it was time to step back from being a board member because I wanted to be the CEO.
Well, hey, congratulations for that happening. And it was a good decision for the board to select you in that role because I've had a chance for a couple of years now to watch you in action. And you are a highly effective executive who meets their goals and manages the finances well, keep the board meetings running like clockwork, and I would suspect your staff enjoys working with you. So congratulations. Even through COVID, the organization has done remarkably well. So, congratulations for all of that.
And thank you, Art.
It's a small world, I'll tell you. The we've had on the podcast people who have been fundraising consultants, Barbara O'Reilly from Windmill Hill. I don't know if you know Barbara. And she's CFRE. I mentioned her at the beginning of the show. People from the Lilly School, we had Una Osili, who is a researcher at the institution there.
And I was fortunate enough to have her on my dissertation committee.
How about that, Dr. Osili? She's a good friend, and she's also been on this podcast. So it's a small world in the fundraising community. Another reason why I think people should think about getting these credentials to build their reputations and to become, sort of the elite in this field, in my opinion, by taking on the CFRE designation.
I think you raise an interesting point, Art. A lot of, if you will, names in the field do have their CFREs, which is wonderful because I do think it points out that, the CFRE is a durable credential because most of the individuals who, again, have risen in the profession have held their CFREs for many years. But I also, especially from my personal perspective, earning the CFRE when I was just basically had just gotten enough experience to be able to sit for the exam, in addition to being for the people who have really been in the profession for years, I think it's too for people who have just started in the profession once they meet the requirements. Because I know, you know, from my own experience, you know, sometimes life and work just gets overwhelming. And one of the first things that can, you know, be pushed to the important but not urgent list is your own professional development, you know, and your own learning about the profession and where you want to go. And having the CFRE was a great way for me to have that reinforced, that I had to make certain I learned a certain amount and attended a certain amount of education every 3 years in order to recertify, in order to keep my certification. And, you know, it was a small thing, but just knowing that really made me, I think, do more exploring than I might have in the profession, got an education in the profession that, you know, otherwise might have gone by the wayside because there were too many things on my to-do list. So I think it's a long way of saying, I think the CFRE is for really a broad range of the profession. And whether you're just starting or you've reached the top, you know, we're all tied together in it by wanting to succeed and grow and continuing to be the best fundraising professionals we can be.
Yeah. Well, it's a great benefit for those who donate to know that people soliciting them actually know what they're doing. You know, and that's not to say people who don't have the designation don't know what they're doing, but people who've gotten the CFRE designation, you can be much more certain about. And I think that's terrific for the fundraising profession. That's certainly a great thing for people who are being solicited. Now, I don't know how many people actually know that when they are solicited, and particularly large givers might know, but what's really exciting is that for donors who are concerned about whether organizations are mismanaging their resources in the fundraising capacity, you can be better assured that professionals who are CFRE certified are going to put that money to great use. They're going to put it to the best possible use. They're going to make sure that the appropriate amounts are spent so that an organization can expand its donor base. They're going to make sure that they're able to reach the most generous people and people who are more likely to give to the organization. And they're going to deal with donors in a very ethical way. So I wanted you to just talk for a minute, Eva, about some of the key criteria that individuals have to achieve in order to become certified. What are they likely to see on that exam?
I think you're noting about the better guarantee of ethical behavior is a very important one, because I mentioned how fundraisers who are CFREs have to achieve education, performance, and practice requirements in order to get the CFRE. They also have to pass an exam, which I'll speak to in a minute, but also they have to attest that they are knowledgeable of and will uphold the International Statement of Ethical Principles in Fundraising. So we do have that as our ethics guide and also an ethics enforcement mechanism, just in case there would be the very rare issue with a fundraiser who holds a CFRE. But to your point about the exam itself is, in the mechanics of it, it's a 200-question multiple-choice exam over the broad range of best practices in ethical fundraising. So we ask individuals questions in the domains of current and prospective donor research, securing the gift, relationship building, leadership and management, volunteer involvement, and ethics, accountability, and professionalism. So it really is a generalist exam. It's gauged at approximately the 5-year level of experience. And I'd like to note that because sometimes when people see our test content outline, which is available at our website at cfre.org, they worry, how can I possibly know all this? You know, what we're looking for is someone who has the basic knowledge, broad range knowledge to be a good fundraiser and to be someone who, you know, because of that broad range knowledge, I think really the advantage is can think about and leverage fundraising in a broad way. So the CFRE and the exam and the preparation for it, I think really helps people, you know, expand beyond their niche of expertise and really think about more broadly fundraising and what they need to know in order to be a well-rounded practitioner. You know, all these things pulled together, I think the behaving ethically, you know, knowing what you need to know about the profession, your ability to get results, it's key to being a CFRE. And, you know, those are core principles too of, I think, most professions that we see as being developed professions.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things I note about the name CFRE is that there is an international attached to that. And I know that you have some interest in really expanding the work internationally. How is that going?
It is going well. Again, we are very proud that our heritage is in North America. You know, the great bulk of our certificates are in the U.S. and Canada. But we have been available in other parts of the world since the 1990s, including the United Kingdom, New Zealand, and Australia. And we have a good contingent of CFREs there. Since the mid-2000s, we have also been available internationally, so beyond those areas I've named. And right now, CFRE, you can earn the credential, you know, worldwide. We have testing sites around the world. You can also take the exam online through a secured system. And an important point with the international is that we're international not simply because people can take the exam anywhere. CFRE as an organization works very hard to make certain that the content of the exam and the application requirements are relevant worldwide. That is why we have an exam committee with representation from, I believe, right now, 5 different countries around the globe. And for an exam committee made up of 7 individuals, that is fairly diverse representation. We also make certain that the language we use on the exam and the question content, you know, our exam committee works very hard to make certain that it is not country specific and that any questions on the exam are not country specific. And we think that's important because, you know, as you know, Art, regulations and regarding philanthropy and taxation around philanthropy can change very rapidly. You know, there are excellent resources for that. You know, national fundraising associations, you know, are the go-to, I think, for fundraising professionals in those areas. What we are really looking at are the essential principles of what constitutes fundraising knowledge. And so our exam committee works to really winnow that to make certain that the knowledge is universally applicable. Do we get it all right all the time? Probably not. Do we work on getting it right all the time? Absolutely. And we are very pleased that we have seen growth, you know, over time in terms of our international certificates. We still have a ways to go there, but we also know certification is really, you know, one of the last steps in the development of fundraising as a profession. There are a lot of other things that have to happen first in terms of, you know, strong national associations, the developments of local codes of ethics, and that sort of thing. So we are not necessarily for every fundraiser in the world right now, but we are there for them when they do want to become certified.
That's great. So Eva, as I think about the future of fundraising, I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
The first one is, when people take the exam, let's say, and don't pass, is there sort of a consistent area that people struggle with who don't take the exam? And maybe has that changed over time? And then secondly, what are some of the issues that are emerging that fundraisers are going to have to deal with that might become subject to future exams?
You know, there is not necessarily one area or another of the exam that we can point to clearly in saying exam takers are just not performing well in this area. Sometimes we see a few regional differences, but it is really very rare. And it's nothing that would be large enough to make us go, something is awry here. That makes us feel good just because I think it does indicate that the content of the exam is an accurate reflection of fundraising knowledge and what fundraisers do on a daily basis. In fact, as a sidebar, all fundraisers listening, please be on the lookout either from us or from your fundraising association you belong to, because very shortly we will be sending out a job analysis survey. And that is a vital part of keeping the CFRE test content outline relevant. It's a survey that asks, what do you do as a fundraiser? How often do you perform the tasks? How important are the tasks to fundraising? And what knowledge do you use to perform the tasks? So if you see the invitation, either through a newsletter or an email or whatever means, to participate in the CFRE job task analysis survey, by all means, if you're a fundraising professional, please participate, because your help is vital in making certain that we do what we need to be doing.
Oh, great that you put that out there. So how about the future, though? What are we likely to see on future exams that we may not see today? What are some of the emerging issues that you see?
You know, Art, I will be able to answer that better once we get this job analysis task force finished and the information in. The reason I am pushing that off a little bit is just this is a task we do every 5 years or so. It's been delayed a little bit longer because of the pandemic this time. And I think, though, and I'll be happy to report back at some future date about what we see from this analysis. I will say overall that from prior analyses, it appears that fundraising as a profession, the changes in it are evolutionary, not revolutionary. What we see are small changes over time rather than necessarily big leaps every 5 years, which, you know, I think makes sense. You know, fundraising is essentially a relationship building business. So those key things, you know, definitely remain the same, even though the technology changes over time and that sort of thing. I do think in this next job analysis, it will be interesting, though, to see if we are getting any indication that the pandemic has substantially changed the way, you know, fundraisers and donors and the communities that are served and the organizations relate. I just don't know. We've all read about the way in which, you know, people are interacting differently because of the pandemic, and, you know, ways in which the pandemic has fundamentally changed us as a society, rather than it being something that, well, we had to do something for 2 years, now we're going to go back to what used to be considered normal. So once we get those results, I'll be in a better position to talk about that. But I think that will be a key thing that certainly I will be looking at in terms of what comes out of that survey.
Fair enough. Well, Eva, as we wind down the interview, I want to just say to you, if CFRE is able to grow, what does growth look like for you over the next, let's say, 5 years? And would that be, in your estimation, enough to cover us as donors and also organizations that need those specific skills?
Yeah, I don't think we will ever reach enough, just because, you know, if we, as we all work to grow philanthropy, you know, the need is going to grow more and more for us to also have professional resources like our fundraising association, membership societies, like CFRE certification, like your work, Art, with giving.org. All that is going to just require continued growth as long as the sector grows. So, you know, there will never be enough, but I think what would be good growth, at least for CFRE, is to continue to grow the number of individuals who have CFRE, because I think that's just, it's good for philanthropy to have that seal of approval, if you will, for individuals who have demonstrated that they have the commitment to continue to grow as a professional and an ethical professional. I think, you know, another area of growth that will be important is to make certain that, you know, people who want to grow in the profession through their education have the resources they need to be successful. Now, we've started in a small way a few years ago at CFRE by preparing some test preparation resources. We now have an online practice exam. We also now have a study guide that individuals can get to help them study for the exam, in addition to our list of recommended reading resources. I think that's another place, though, where, you know, potentially, you know, if CFRE can play a role in making certain that we continue to have good resources for practitioners, that's certainly a good way to help grow the profession and support CFRE in its efforts to have a quality exam.
Well, look, Eva, I really appreciate you spending this time with me and sharing your life a little bit and the work of CFRE. For those of you who don't know, it's the Certified Fundraising Exam, and CFRE International is the purveyor of that exam. Eva is the CEO of the organization, and it's just been great getting to know you a little bit more than normal on this podcast and sharing what you do every day to help the fundraising profession and donors and organizations thrive. And for all of our listeners, I appreciate you checking in. And if you want to hear other episodes, please go to our website, heartgiving.podbean.com, or you can find us on all major podcast platforms. It would be also great if you would post a review, specifically if you have Apple Podcasts. You could post a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. And remember to subscribe to the show, because that also helps us build audience. If you'd like to make a donation to the show, you can do that also by going to give.org and donating to the Wise Giving Alliance. And you can also find the Heart of Giving podcast on Patreon, if you choose to donate that way. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you back here next week for a new episode.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's Terms of Service.